Hello and welcome to Overvolted, what, 26 now. Yeah, we are joining in Noaman and Alex here as we're going to talk about the latest news of the week. So we have some great stuff lined up. TSMC and GloFlow dealing with shortages. We have the 6700 XT, also NVIDIA with a new driver. The Core i7-11700K, man, that's going to get hard to say.
That's a mouthful.
That's going to get hard to say here come 14-1500.
Oh, man.
Well, we have a review for that was posted over on Anantech, and then we'll see where we go from there. We might have one more topic depending on our time. So let's go ahead and get started with TSMC.
Yeah, so apparently their capacity was all booked out, but they're suddenly auctioning excess wafer capacity. So that's a bit surprising.
Do we know how much wafer capacity?
By the looks of things, no. But we know it was expensive. So it was at a 15 to 20% premium, according to this PC Mag article.
The source is
PC Gamer.
Via Computer Base.
All right.
So this is from Computer Base.
Right. It's surprising because by the looks of things, it must be a lot of capacity, right? Even though the number is not given, it must be a large enough amount for someone to say, hey, yeah, we're willing to buy it. Now, I think, in my professional opinion, that this is probably either someone canceling their orders or them coming up with process improvements, you know? For example, increasing the yield rates or maybe just changing the fundamental technology about how it works.
I wouldn't be surprised if they actually took a little bit of their capacity from their test line or something like that.
In order to just fill out the demand that's so excruciatingly high.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much turned on every machine they got in that building.
I mean,
I would if I was them.
What was that capacity? So this makes me think maybe they improved the yield rates on the 7nm and we're like, listen, oh, cool, we don't need to, you know, our yield rates are so good, we can kind of maybe get away with not testing them. Maybe that could be the case.
Well, there's a little bit of slush that is usually involved with bids and pricing and things like that. They could have just tightened up their slush amount so that they're running at a tighter margin for error. Like if they accidentally had some production issue during a couple of days during a month, they wouldn't be able to deliver. But maybe they have that written into the contract as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be contractual issues. Interestingly enough, I've worked on contracts and there's always loopholes to get out of them. So maybe if this was some smaller order that they kind of wanted to fulfill but weren't able to, this could be the case.
So it looks like Ian decided, thanks for joining us, but he's like 7nm is a 0.09 defect per centimeter squared. So a very low defect rate.
Right. So it's not them fixing that. So it could be a cancellation. I mean, this just adds more weight to that theory.
Right. And
so, some
GlobalFoundries is trying to get more capacity as well. They're actually investing $1.4 million to help address the shortage. Oh, yeah, billion. The big B, little
that's
B.
That's a lot more substantial. Okay, that's a lot more substantial then.
So $1.4 billion to ramp up production. I'm assuming that's probably going to go for some more equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. Plus, that's probably one of the few routes they would have to take because they're owned by the government of Abu Dhabi. via a state-owned fund. So raising capital would be a bit difficult, you know, because they're basically a private company right now. And, you know, if you're a public company, you can just offer up more shares, you know, and your books are kind of out in the open. But because you're a private company, that leaves you very limited sources of raising capital.
Yeah. Is there any sort of roadmap for them to move off of 14? Like, do they have anything past 14 yet, Kirk?
I haven't seen anything. And in this bit of news, it's to ramp up production amongst their 12 nanometer up to 90 nanometer products. There are still things being done at 90 nanometer, guys. And so,
yep.
I mean, we have a comment saying GloFlow has to start over with 7 nanometer. They're probably not even going to bother. They might just skip it.
Oh, interesting comment in YouTube. Global Foundries might IPO in late 2021.
Yeah, that's from Ian. Ian Tretchels. Yep. 12 FDX. That would be 12
Is
nanometer
that the
FinFET.
Oh, that's the GloFlow next stage of their 12 nanometer.
Okay.
Yep.
So
FDX.
By the way,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'd really like to get Ian on next week to discuss his article in a bit more depth, but it's a shame that we couldn't get him on.
Because we're going to discuss your article here in a little bit, just saying.
We are. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah. Also, Ian, would you be interested in coming on the show sometime? Just let us know in the comments.
Or in Discord.
I mean, we've talked to it a couple of times. We've talked to him about it a couple of times. It's just,
we can sideboard that one and discuss with you offline, of course.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything else that we can really talk about with the GloFlow stuff, or is that pretty much all the
info? Yes, there's one thing that I heard about a while back was Global Foundries could possibly license some of the more advanced nodes from TSMC or Samsung, because that would be the way to go to kind of alleviate the stress on the market right now. Because the U.S. president kind of said, "Hey, we kind of want to solve this issue," and they kind of want to throw a big bag of money to solve the issue. And
I
we know
throwing
that even
a big bag of money into resources to evaluate what the problem with the chain is. I don't think that millions of dollars is meant to actually fix the problem.
Possibly, but you know, they might put money into a company maybe to fix issues, and I think Global Foundries is in a good position. If they do IPO, you know, they could do that, and they could also do like a raise of money, and they could basically just buy their way into the tech lead, you know.
Right.
Okay, so Ian says it's only non-EOV EUV processes, and Global Foundry doesn't have any EUV machines.
Yeah.
That's another problem, because there's only one company that makes these ASML machines, right?
I have no idea, honestly.
Yeah, so ASML Holdings, based in the Netherlands, they're the only company in the world that makes the machines to build processors.
He was in a Global Foundries Fab 8 when they had an EUV machine in 2018. I am so jealous of you.
Yeah.
I am so jealous of Ian. He gets to do so many cool things.
Yep.
Eat silicone.
Personally,
and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I would be really happy if someone just gave me an ARM CPU and was like, "Here, take this." Like, just a CPU, nothing else.
GloFlow was working on a program to develop EUVs to develop into EUV when GloFlow quit. Okay.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Do we have anything else we want to cover on the GloFlow stuff?
No, I think that's it. But you know, GloFlow still, I think they still make IO IO chips for AMD. But that's the
Yeah.
most, and that's the most notable thing we know that they do. So
Well, I think the thing to read out of their 7 nanometer purchase from ASML would be maybe they're going to start doing 7 nanometer IO dies as AMD transitions to 5.
sure, if the economies of scale are there, could work. But then IO dies really don't need to be on the latest node, you know? They could stay
Correct.
on 12, 14 for a while.
Well, 7 isn't even the latest node anymore, remember?
No, it's not even
Yeah,
cutting edge.
7 is old.
but it's old now, but there's still going to be chips that really need it more. Plus, it's going to get expensive for AMD, you know, to make these chips.
Right.
But they still have that agreement with GlobalFoundries. So as long as it's from GlobalFoundries, I think they should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, what was the next thing we wanted to cover? The
The big
6700
announcement.
XT?
Yeah.
Yep.
This was
So,
the
and
card.
things.
This was the card that was more promising to budget-minded gamers, but I'm not sure if a $500 card is considered budget anymore.
Today it
I
is.
mean, it's $479, but
So
yeah, I get that.
I'm gonna play devil's advocate here right now. If you can actually
Mm-hmm.
get these cards for about 550 at, in stores, it's not that bad if they can actually give you enough supply because of
Compared
the
to the
current market.
MSRP, yeah.
The current cards that you're trying to buy, I mean, I gave like 720 before tax for an MSI 3070 because I can't hold on anymore.
Lordy.
And that's just kind of what you got to do now. I mean, and I really tried hard to buy a card at retail. You can't. MSRP doesn't exist right now due to demand. So if they can
Well,
supply at that price, it's not that bad. And that is that much more money that is going into the hands of the AIBs and AMD themselves instead of scalpers and middlemen.
I'll be honest, in my part of the world, MSRP didn't exist. So seeing these kind of crazy prices is kind of normal for us.
What I'm hoping is that this card normalizes and hits maybe. I mean, the VRAM on it is. There's a lot of VRAM on there, so it probably won't get really cheap.
No, but it's cheaper
But
than
I mean, maybe
HBM.
you could. Maybe it could get to $400, And at $400, what this thing can do is, I guess, sort of compelling. I don't even know anymore, though. We need a
I
major reset into real, actual, substantial pricing
don't think
that
that's gonna
people can pay
happen.
for. But
That's not gonna happen because the card companies, so the guys who make the chips themselves, they want to drive prices up because I've seen this trend in the market where people are buying products at extended life cycles. That means, like, if you're buying a phone every year, you're buying it every 2 years, 3 years. And that's been applying, that same concept has been creeping up on every other industry. People are just holding on to their cards for a longer period. For example, the 3000 series launch was kind of positioned as a way, as an upgrade path to people who are 9 or 10 series cards. And that's kind of a strong indicator of this. So if I'm upgrading after 4 or 5 years, you know, maybe I'm fine with paying the
To
price.
play devil's advocate, though, the general consensus was that you upgraded your graphics card every 2 generations. Though the problem is that the product launches have become so much longer apart than they have been in the past, where the 10 series like just stayed forever.
Yeah, I did.
Um, so somebody who's, before you would have graphics card launches every 12 to 18 months, and we've been going way further than that recently.
Yeah, I think that makes sense too. I wish phones were on an 18-month life cycle because it's just crazy what's happening in that space. But and I hope that happens to GPUs as well because, you know, I bought the 5700 XT, and if I compare it to the 6700 XT and looking at some of the features it has, I have fear of missing out. You know? Sure, well, AMD could capitalize on that, but I don't want that as a user, do I?
Well, here's the thing. With phones, the price is more determined by the quality of components in the phone. And then the customer's willingness to pay that price that it ends up at. So they find ways to cut corners and make it cheaper. Now, with GPUs, we're looking at this mining market where within 100 days, you can almost pay off the MSRP for a 3060 just by running a mining software on your computer. And
not anymore, though.
No, right? with the hash rate halving for ETH, there's Kapow and other coins that you can mine and still make about 250 a day. And at 250 a day, 120 days, if napkin math serves, you're looking somewhere in the 300 almost range. The card listed MSRP of what, 320 was it? 329.
329.
Yeah. So you could nearly pay off the card completely in 4 months. Anything after that would be profit. And that's assuming the crypto market's stable enough for 3 months. But 3 months is a fairly good projection period within crypto. 6 months, it gets a little fuzzy. 1 year, you might as well not even guess. But if you're competing for people who can do economies of scale here, you know, you buy one card, you pay it off in 4 months. You buy four cards, you still pay all four off in 4 months. That drives people to buy as many as possible and then attempt to make all that money back and then either keep making money afterward or try to sell the card at a slight loss from purchase price, but anything they sell it for would be a net gain for them. So
yeah, but you got to keep in mind that the crypto market has its booms, so it's in a boom right now, and then it has its crashes right after. And if you know, we had a look at the Bitcoin prices earlier. I think it was before the show last week, and what we notice is there's a boom, price goes up, then it crashes.
But the amount of money that miners make relatively stays the same if you're swapping coins and things like that to more in-demand algorithms.
But I feel that when that crash happens, a lot of the gamers, the folks like you and me, are going to be able to get these cards. You know, even though they're mined on and they're used. But
eventually demand will the amount of cards that these miners are running will saturate, because let's be realistic. Unless you are running a very industrial setup, most people do not have the ability to run 80 cards in their house. They don't.
In fact, anything more than 5 to 10 GPUs, I think your power grid can't handle it at home. Plus, it's not very efficient
It depends on your. I think you can only run like what, 10 per 110 circuit, Kirk.
You can run up to about 1500 amps or not amps watts per 15 amp circuit, and that's obviously going to be not very safe because a lot of breakers will start to trip as they get warm over that 10 amp mark. And some people only have 10 amp circuits,
so it'll limit their household use. Let's say 15 GPUs. If you're not able to scale, this business doesn't make sense. So you'll have to get ASICs. In China, that's what we're seeing is that
ASICs are very power drawing as well.
Sure, but they're kind of meant.
Well, that's to mine Bitcoin, though. If you're talking about. It depends on what we're talking about mining here. A lot of people will just reach a certain point of saturation and they'll stop buying cards, or they'll buy higher end cards.
But here's the thing.
And then those cards will be recycled in the market.
People who want to make the money can go and buy those 15 cards, host them at their house, put another 15 at their friend's house who doesn't know computers, and just kind of scale out that way, or get some extra more robust circuits in their house, run it off
Yeah,
their
but
dryer circuit, who knows?
I have a friend who mines, and he's talked about it before, and he said there's a certain point where it becomes a job,
There
where
is.
maintenance and making sure all the miners are running, and if you know the internet goes out in one place, you have to run over there and you have to check on it. He's like it, and then it gets to a point where do you want to quit your job to mine all day, and does that even make sense? So, I mean.
It becomes a chore after you get about 30 cards going, or should I say about 4 to 5 rigs going, because you're getting one
Yeah.
that might crash per day depending on how tightly you're tuning it.
Yep. And that's why we've seen a lot of people buy laptops because laptops aren't as efficient for mining any cryptocurrency, actually. I mean, there is a certain level of efficiency, but it's just not that high. Like, I mined, I recently got a very nice laptop from Asus. And it has 3070 in it, and I was curious. It's like, hey, what if I mine Bitcoin on it? And it was nearly twice as profitable as mining on a 5700 XT. Even though that was there, you got to keep in mind that laptops have thermal limits, right? Even with the fan running on max, like there's going to be a point where it overheats and it's just going to crash. So laptops could be a saving grace for gamers.
Uh-oh. Ian saying to use review samples for mining.
Well,
Uh-oh.
they said I could go crazy, so this is
No,
it.
I've talked to some AIB guys, and they've complained that they're like, I know what they're all doing with those damn cards. I know why they want them. Like, I just want one. I just want one.
To game on, of course.
Yeah, of course.
I want
Game
to.
algorithms.
No. This card that I bought, I'm mining on. I don't care. I gave $700 for it. It's gonna be running.
Well, let me put
Anyway.
the rule down here. For GPUs, as soon as the profitability for them stretches out to 6 months to 8 months to pay off the
Oh, it's not
card,
worth it.
then it
No,
will become a free sell, a fire sell of cards in the after used market. People
but
will
yeah,
stop buying them
just
because 8 to 9 months out, that's very speculative at that point. People won't feel comfortable paying $1,000 for GPUs. And right
no, they
now we're
won't.
still at the 4 month mark, so we're still going to be out of options.
The only way, so the part that's happening now that I think we're hitting is the part where people are using their credit cards who aren't really tech savvy and they're trying to get involved in mining and they kind of don't know what they're doing and they're buying stuff because they have FOMO. And
Yeah,
when
they
you have
do.
FOMO,
I have
those are
a
the people who tend to lose their shirts on it because they, bought 40 grand worth of hardware or they bought like 20 grand worth of hardware.
Yeah,
And they're
so
watching
there's
themselves make $300 a day or two, or I'm sorry, $100 a day. And once they realize that they're only making that, and then they're seeing the prices vary every day, or the, I'm sorry, their profits vary every day. And the fact that they need to cool, every room in their house, that's when this stuff starts to happen. You see people who get really, like the people who bought GameStop when it was at, who bought like 10 grand worth of GameStop when it was at $300 a share. It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, interesting enough, I have the story. I was telling who was I telling? I was telling someone last week about it. This guy basically wanted to sell 6900 XTs and he had like six of them. And he's like, listen, I bought these, I'm kind of stuck with them and I want to sell them because I bought them for whatever reason. A reason I'm not going to disclose, but when someone buys 6900 XTs, you know what the reason is. But he bought them and he ended up selling it at a loss. He was selling each card for basically $500, but he was like, you have to buy you have to buy all of them in one go, right? I didn't have that kind of money.
I would have.
I didn't have that. I didn't like, even if I maxed out my card, like, that would have been a very bad decision, even if I profited off it in the short term, right?
If you know you can make the money back before the billing cycle, it's not a big deal. If you're planning on paying off the cards for months with these things, then it's a little... Okay, the problem here is this is not a business that is where you can have a better feeling on how stable the market is. This is a very unstable market.
Exactly. Funnily enough, I didn't get it, but there was a guy who came in after me and he bought all of them in one go. And if he was a miner, that's just pure profit.
Would have been like, what, $3,000? $3,000 US?
Yeah. This guy was basically a desperate sale, man. And it's
really truth be told, I would have taken him up on it myself.
I would have taken him up on it.
But, you know, you have to be in a financial situation to make that a worthwhile investment move. Like, the last thing you really want to do is go into debt to do a speculative investment. I mean,
exactly. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there's ETFs and such out there that are like 3x and 10x kind of speculatives that you can put $100 in and lose all 100 or more pretty quick. So definitely don't do investments on leverage. It's not a great idea unless if you're like for sure, like, you know, when AMD was at $3 and we were talking about chiplets, right?
Yep.
I actually could not buy AMD stock at $3, even though I wanted to.
Yeah.
And this is becoming a Dort finance tips.
We are not finance tips. We do not provide financial advice. Do not listen to us. We do not know what we're talking about.
We are not licensed financial providers, yada, yada. Yes. Don't sue us.
Yes. Also, I wish I would have bought it at $3, but I couldn't because when it was at $3, the brokerage services in my region aren't as available, I would say. So I couldn't. But back to the 6700 XT. Yeah, it's $479, but keep in mind, it's 230 watts with 40 compute units, 12 gigs of VRAM. So I think from that perspective, it's not that bad. You know, it's a 1440p card. It kind of promises to edge out some of the competition, right? And if I have a look at some of the games they've shown, right? So they have Assassin's Creed, where they're claiming that the 3070, they've etched out the 3070 and the 3060 Ti. There is Borderlands 3, where the difference is a bit less, but it's still there. There's Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. There's Cyberpunk 2077, which is very close to the 3070. In fact, it might be a bit less as well. But in Dirt 5 is where they really shine, where the 3070 is less than 60 FPS.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Gears 5, where they're more or less on par with 3070. But keep in mind, these numbers are based on AMD's testing.
And with bar support, of course.
I mean, to be fair, their testing has generally been accurate. Generally.
Yes, but it's with the boosting and the bar support enabled.
Yeah.
On a 5000 series CPU.
Which, to be fair, are things you can actually buy in the channel quite often. They are in stock a lot compared to everything else.
The 5800X is very available. I've seen it available quite often. And to a lesser extent, the 5600. But if you're looking for the 5950, you're out of luck. I haven't seen those even pop up as available on people that are botting.
Although I have seen, you know, people selling those things on Hardware Swap for not a whole lot over retail. So if you really want one, like, you don't have to get physically abused.
Yeah, Hardware Swap Reddit guys.
They don't got to take your shirt off. Yeah.
So Zuron said
GPUs
something.
GPUs are going to get hammered, though.
Yeah. Zuron said something very interesting in the chat. I just want to play WoW at 4K ultra ray tracing on. I don't know about the ray tracing, but there is something at the end of our discussion that we might cover that can allow you to do that without breaking the bank.
I like Ian's comment from a few minutes ago about how he has a version of Minesweeper that mines.
Exactly.
Minesweeper
that's,
benchmarks.
It's probably the freeware part of it, right?
It's from the bomb factory. They're bombs. Explosive. If anybody got the reference.
And explosive. There's a comment or a question, I should say, about what we were just talking about before with stocks. He's asking, why do you guys think that Intel, AMD, NVIDIA stocks are falling? And do people think they aren't making bank? And quite honestly, I'm seeing a large shift of like the past 2 weeks where just technology stocks in general, everything from TSMC, NVIDIA, Amazon. Amazon's down at about 3,000 per share now, and they were at about 3,300. So that's, what, a 10% drop. And they're Amazon. They're making bank right now. But it's just the general consensus. People are shifting out of the tech and going more into commodities at the moment. So it's just market shift.
Exactly. And it might be the guys on Wall Street who are cashing in their chips, you know? They bought a lot of stock when the prices were low, and they probably sold it off at the peaks. And,
yeah, I mean,
they're not trading it as often anymore.
The Fed dumped a ton of money into tech stocks, which were, you know, somewhat riskier. They were higher risk, higher reward, and the reward came in. So, I mean,
at some point,
you want to take your money and, you know, like he said, cash your chips and get up from the table.
It's the raising bond rate that's the signal for that, and why people are moving over to more value things like commodities that tend to weather inflation better. So it's just the normal fear and uncertainty in the market that's causing the reaction. I did want to bring up Damien, though, if you want to finish your thought, and then we'll move to that.
Yep. So there's a comment in the comment section saying, NVIDIA can easily double GPU production if the wafers and fab ability was there. Yeah, if I have more factories, I can make more stuff. But setting up that availability takes time, you know? So that's something you need to consider as well. Anyway, I think we should transition into our second topic.
Yeah, Damien mentions that bar support is coming to 3000 series shortly, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about here. NVIDIA is promising boosts of up to 10% on the 30 series cards because they're adding resizable bar support, just like AMD did with their cards. And so this should give us similar performance gains to what we saw with AMD. Maybe not, depending, because they're just throwing this in rather than designing a card with this support in mind. So there is that to be aware of.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, they only support 256 megabyte blocks. So that's...
Yeah, so they don't go to unlimited bar. They just go up to 256. No.
So it's a limited implementation, you could say. And the games that support it, funnily enough, are very similar to the games we read out from AMD's benchmarks earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we know what NVIDIA is going for. They're going for a...
Keeping up with the Joneses.
You could say that. But... what's interesting about resizable bar is that it's a PCIe 4.0 feature. It's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
People just didn't like implement it, you know? It's one of those cool things that's out there that companies are trying to bank on.
There is that variable frame rate thing in HDMI spec that nobody implemented for a while until somebody said G-Sync. And AMD is like, hey, we got this FreeSync thing that uses this standard. Let's use that instead of putting chips into everything.
I don't think putting chips into everything makes sense. Like,
well, it definitely added to the price for G-Sync.
Exactly, that's the problem.
Okay, so are there any statistics that show how many RDNA 2 GPUs were manufactured versus the Ampere? Looking at Steam's hardware survey, well, that's your first problem. You look at Steam's hardware survey.
Yeah, we don't know what the baseline.
No, we have no idea what the manufacturing stuff is. That stuff is always kept very close to the chest, and the only way you can ever find that out is if someone emails you with some numbers. That's something that gets leaked. That's not something that you can really find.
Yeah,
that's something that you might find on like earnings reports though at some point. Yeah. That
well, Mike maybe Rizzone like a
year
is...
down the line.
Mike Rizzone's making comments here where he's giving us statistics for production for Turing. And mm-hmm. obviously what they were able to do with Turing could very well be what they do with Ampere. And so mm-hmm. the numbers could be reliable as a rough estimate of how many Ampere GPUs are being produced.
I mean, I can tell you right now that in the channel, there are definitely more NVIDIA cards hitting, you know, retailers than the AMD ones. The AMD ones are harder to get.
Looks like Fur is correcting. It was a PCIe 3 feature for resizable bar.
Wow.
It existed way back then, but nobody wanted to use it for whatever reason.
Thanks for correcting me, by the way.
PCIe 3.0 was, God, like 8 years ago?
Yep. Also, there's a very interesting comment in the comment section by this guy named Noman Khalil. He has given his email in case anyone wants to share any leaks. So please do hit him up on that.
I mean, you guys
send him those pictures you need to send to Alex, right?
The anime girls.
Yep.
Anime girls. Go for
call
it.
Callouts for anime girls.
You will get replies. I promise you that.
So the one thing I wanted to throw in that we didn't really talk about is Donnie's article, which I linked in our Discord. The his sort of prediction on what he thought the 6700 XT would be, and he was pretty accurate. And I could say this because he's not here. It was pretty well done. If he was here, I'd tell him it's terrible.
So yeah, right. Go check that on our website.
Yeah, it's
Reese. One second. Resizable bar will only be coming to 30 series cards from NVIDIA.
The title is NVIDIA's Mainstream 3060 Ti is Coming, and What Will AMD Have to Compete? So if you guys want to check that out.
And Damien wanted to correct us as well and let us know that he was suggesting or meaning that the 3000 series AMD CPUs were the ones that would be getting bar support. So.
And yes, Mikondo, we covered Glowflow expansion. That's about 20 minutes ago.
Yes, right there.
What is the next thing we have? I guess to cover, would it be the i7?
Yes.
Yep.
So Ian will like this part.
If he's still here,
he did a fantastic job on this. So we were just commenting before the live stream about some of the features that we saw in this, and some of the newer things that may have been done that we really liked.
I find it kind of interesting that it seems to be a reverse of the other CPUs that they've released over the past couple of years, where it seems to be better at multi-core for the same core count compared to the AMD chips, but it is worse at gaming. In a lot of the tests here, it just seems to be worse at gaming. This is just sort of my short thoughts on this, that it might be because of the fact that it was backported to 10 nanometer. And, you know, the latency issues or the clock speeds themselves are just not up to snuff.
Yep.
Notice the regression that Ian pointed out of about 6 to 10 nanoseconds in the interclock speed or intercore latencies.
Yeah.
So that could be a contributing factor to the reduction in gaming performance. But
yeah, I mean, that AMD could be...
still has a pretty high latency there as well, but they still do phenomenally better at gaming. So
So, I mean, the leaks that I saw from Forbes the other day, just taking a quick look before we started talking, they said these are supposed to be just under, this chip was supposed to be just under $500. And I mean, around that price, you can get an 8700X, or I'm sorry, a 5800X, which would be a better gaming chip. So it's interesting that the roles have kind of reversed here.
Yeah,
I don't know. But then at the same point, like, if you really want the multi-core performance, can't you just give more money and get the 12-core or the 16-core? Wouldn't it just scale better that way?
Yeah, but then based on what we're seeing in terms of the numbers, what's stopping you from getting an older gen processor for a low price?
As long as they're available, that might just be the option.
Yeah, I think that's what happened last gen as well, right?
I mean, it was more the fact that they were kind of the same as last gen, so it didn't really make sense, especially because some retailers were selling those chips at a discount, like I know Micro Center was.
I'll be honest here, like, I give Intel a lot of flack, but the one space they've done really well is the NUC space. Like, the Tiger Lake NUCs, I really think that they're amazing machines. Like, for how much of a flack we give them, we have to give them credit where it's due, you know?
No, Ian, I wasn't commenting on your review being a leak. I meant Forbes was covering a leak that I was looking for.
Somebody thanked him about the leaks in the comments. He was responding to that.
And the older processor for a lower price generally happens. There was a period with the Intel stuff where it kind of wouldn't happen because they would just slot in the same chips. And there would be a short period where they would have like sales. And then after that, they'd go just out of the channel. I remember that happening a lot with
AVX test. Hey, funny enough, I think AMD is coming up with AVX support
this
or
one?
Something.
104C. Yeah, I
saw
that.
Wait, what? Whoa, I didn't catch that. I didn't. Wow, I didn't have the normal like hour and a half that I like
power.
To spend.
290 watts on that first cycle right there. Peak.
Wow.
And then it got so,
that's a lot of...
then it got so saturated that it couldn't even boost that high anymore for the subsequent ones.
Get a water cooler, my friends.
So, I mean,
360 mm rads.
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't know.
Invest in Ace Tech. As like, a company or in your ads?
Like, I was impressed by the Blender performance, if you're talking about generation over generation, and some of the handbrake tests. I think it even took the lead in some of the handbrake tests, too. It did really well, considering that it's 10 nanometer architecture backported to 14. But, I mean, as a product, I don't know. The prices just seem high to me for what these are. He used a two kilogram all copper air cooler. Yeah, you could do that. 10 seconds on and off.
But man, these are really hot chips. So if anyone is looking for a PC / leg warmer, you know where to go.
This is a great gift for the wife. Just aim the fans at her legs and feet.
Well,
you'll be good.
Let's be real here. The real option for the wife is to mine on that system with GPUs. That would be a more efficient leg warmer.
My wife's GPU is mining as we speak. It helps keep the room she's in warm.
Yes, sirree. But one cool thing that Intel did to kind of add value to their ecosystem is go like, yeah, you can get Xe GPUs once they come out, and that's another thing I kind of appreciate about them. You know, they're jumping into the space head on. You know, with Raja moving over from AMD, I think the integrated GPU space is going to get interesting.
Well, had they actually met their timelines with DG1 and such, and actually came out with Xe GPU by now, they could have been profiting off of this whole mining craze if it was a mining capable card. And there's no reason to think that it wouldn't have been able to. So,
yeah, from what I understand about how the cards were designed, it probably would have been a good mining card.
Also, if anyone from Intel is listening, I will throw you a challenge right now. If I can run a NUC, if you guys send me a NUC to review, I will get rid of my gaming PC. I will sell it, and I will never use an AMD product again.
Wow.
I don't know if we can promise that to anybody as a biased reviewer, though, to promise to never use anything else.
Then again,
you're a news guy, so, you know.
My testing rig is going to have whatever I need to test in it, but my daily driver is going to be a NUC, is what I'm saying.
I actually have been thinking about that.
What makes you so comfortable with using a NUC? Honest question, what makes you so comfortable using a NUC?
I don't game as much anymore. You know, most of my tasks are coding related, and I can do with the limitations of a smaller machine. Plus, I'm planning on moving to another city for a job, and, you know, I'm probably going to have to get something, a small apartment, you know? So a PC really wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, you can always go Mini ITX. Mini ITX is always an option. I like Mini ITX.
I like it too, but I'm not willing to pay the ITX tax.
So there's a NUC that I've actually had the opportunity of using for work. We've deployed several of these, the bricks from Gigabyte, which is their brand of NUC. Basically, it's like a NUC, just taller to fit a fatter heat sink in the thing, because these things run hot. They're running the 5775R, which is the highest performance NUC CPU that you can get, right? With the better Iris Pro graphics. The one that I would try to use personally. However, because these are running basically a laptop impaler fan kind of thing, it's like having a Radeon old school card with this the blower fan. What? It is noisy, guys. Let me tell you, if you get this thing to start spinning up, it gets noisy. Is it a hairdryer?
Does it sound like a hairdryer, Kirk?
It almost does, but not that loud. It's a lower decibel level for sure, but it sounds like a quiet hairdryer.
It has that.
I think maybe they could approach what was that fan brand? The one that's brown?
Noctua.
Noctua makes amazing mini ITX fans. And they're crazy. Oh,
super chat.
Denver sent us a super chat saying, I have a Lenovo M7 5Q Gen 2 with a 4750 GE. Only cost me $530 on sale. That's really good value. If I could get one here, I would.
Yeah, right. I bought for Black Friday, I bought a Lenovo. I'm actually using it right now. Lenovo ThinkPad with a Ryzen 7 4700G. This thing is wonderful.
Yeah,
it's honestly wonderful. I would have given an ARM for that processor because...
Is that with capitals? ARM?
Yes.
You would have given
an
ARM CPU for that?
Yep.
Yeah. ARM CPUs are pretty cheap by themselves, so I mean that's a pretty good trade for you then.
You know, the man makes a pretty good point here of why don't you just get a laptop instead of looking at a NUC? And quite honestly, they are laptops in a box. There's no reason why you wouldn't consider that, because a laptop would come with its own integrated screen. You could just pick it up and go with it, whereas these NUCs, you pick it up and it loses power. You're gone. You know, you could transport it around, but you wouldn't have a screen.
So I thought about this quite a bit and I chose the NUX because I don't want to end up working while I'm traveling. You know, like if I'm on a vacation, I don't want to pull out my laptop and write a review. I don't want to go to conferences and take my laptop with me. It doesn't make sense, you know, like,
I suppose.
I just get a tablet.
I lug an Alienware laptop around, so I know how it goes.
Hey, I spent 2.5, 3 years carrying a gaming laptop on my back for university. Never again.
Adams or ADM Vorlon, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that, but says he's had 3 NUCs fail, and it was super annoying. There seems to be issues around the CMOS battery, and then unrecoverable BIOS issues. And I've had 1 Brix fail on me. Yeah, we've got several NUCs as well, and only one has really had a problem. The biggest problem we've had with our NUCs is we've bought like the i3 and i5 versions, and they just start becoming not that responsive just in general. Just browsing the web, playing video in particular, they just act kind of sluggish. Can't say why. You would think that they would be able to perform, but I guess just the laptop part of them makes it just not that pleasant of an experience versus a full-fledged desktop experience.
I guess.
Ian, one day I'm going to have to ask you for specific old CPUs to use for testing, because I know you have every last one of them, and it would be easier to find them than to find them on eBay. He has 9. He said he has 9 Broadwell desktop CPUs. Jesus.
Wow.
Oh, and wow, and our editor-in-chief popped in, Donnie. Where's Jim? I'm sick of these clowns. I mean...
Hey, our Hong boss Kong. Is bigger clown. You should meet him sometime.
He didn't even show up for the podcast. What's up with that?
I shouted out his article, that terrible one you did about the you know, your rumored 6700 stuff you did. But, you know,
yeah, so
you wasn't here, so.
Yeah. People want us to talk about the ARM acquisition.
You mean the one that may or may not happen?
Yeah, so there's a lot of regulatory issues with ARM buying them, because they would essentially have insights into every competitor they have, and that's a market position that is hell for a company like, organization like the SEC. What do you call the Fair Trade Commission? That's the SEC, right, in the U.S.?
I'm not sure. The Fair Trade
Commission. Yeah, basically it's a regulatory mess.
It's either SEC or FCC, yeah. I think the SEC is the Securities Exchange, so that would be like trading.
Yeah,
Exchange. Thanks for correcting my non-US intelligence on that. Honestly, like, they're having a lot of issues, and ARM China has their own issues, and it's generally going to be very difficult for them to finish this transaction. FTC.
Donnie, FTC. Thank you. There you go.
Yeah.
Federal Trade Commission. Yeah.
I personally wouldn't want them to buy ARM as well, because as we covered in one of our other articles on AdoreTV.com, Samsung, among many other vendors, is actually working on an ARM chip for laptops, and that's going to be a huge push. What if NVIDIA had this information beforehand? You know, this would give them an unprecedented advantage in the market. And I'm not comfortable with that, you know?
Mike Brazone said, Renard 4000 desktop are rare, 12% of all Matisse in the worldwide channel today. Highest availability is the 4700G, but the other one is the largest full run volume. No, I was specifically talking about laptop chips, not the Renard desktop though.
APUs, yeah.
I'd really like to get my hands on one of them just to test those things.
Yeah, I had, so the laptop I got the other day had a 5800H in it. Unfortunately, I had very limited time with it because it was a new device launching, but I do plan to ask for it again at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's not the same thing, but it would be amazing to test on, you know, to get into the nitty-gritty.
Those things, these APU laptops are just wonderful.
They are. Dude, I got crazy amount of battery life just using the integrated graphics and turning off the GPU, the dedicated GPU. And I was like, I wish I had this when I was in university. I mm-hmm. wish I did. But what are you going to do? I didn't. It scored pretty high. Let me check the review. So we gave it a pretty high score out of 10. It scored an 8.6 out of 10, which was huge. It only lost out on the battery department because the DGPU, you can't take it around anywhere. And I was like, okay, even if you know, I turn it off, it doesn't make sense mm-hmm. for this laptop. But overall, the Asus G533, yeah, is an amazing laptop. You guys should definitely check it out.
So what is the other thing we wanted to cover, Kirk, before we wrap it up?
It's future looking, and I know Noaman is excited about this topic. So let's flip over to that real quick, just to tease a little bit. This is leak-ish, I guess you could say. Go ahead and talk about this.
Yeah, so we know for a fact that Apple is going to be releasing some M1-based iMacs. Luke Miani, one of these YouTubers, actually managed to cram a M1 Mac Mini into an iMac. And funnily enough, I watched this video the other day, and I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. And then our friend John Prosser had these interesting renders come out. So apparently Apple's going to be working on releasing these sometime soon, hopefully next month, these new iMacs, which look absolutely brilliant, you know?
Hey, at least they're not CRTs, right?
Exactly. And by the looks of things, like, they're going to be powerful, they're going to be sleek, slender, and I bet the price is going to be up there as well. But having a look at these renders, if Apple makes something that's half as good, I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to buy these because folks don't like this decade-plus-old design that they have for the iMacs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the performance level that we're looking at, the M1 Max were basically a 1050 Ti and I think a 8-core CPU. Imagine doing better than that in this kind of form factor. That's just crazy. I mean,
so I really like the designs of those. If those are the actual ones that come out, they look really nice. I'm a function over form person, but those do look really nice.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. So we got a comment from the Denvera guy,
mm-hmm.
and he said during testing before ordering 100+ laptops, the ThinkPad L15s we ended up ordering were faster and more efficient than my Mac M1 Mini. Or my M1 Mac Mini in Handbrake software transcode to H.265.
Yeah, but
that's software transcode for one.
Yeah, that's... they're not there yet. I'll give you that. But how many people are going to be watching videos on these laptops? The question. If you're ordering 100+ laptops, it's probably going to be for Excel and Word, right?
Yeah. But not encoding H.265. That's a little exotic. Exactly. Yeah, encoding 264, maybe. Decode for both, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And you got to keep in mind that, you know, even if one of your employees ends up using Final Cut or something to render video, it's not going to be 4K video. It's not going to be H.265. It's probably going to be H.264. So
that, and it's going to be hardware-assisted. Guaranteed.
Exactly. So even though it might be like 5 to 10% ahead, like these L15s, there are some other advantages to the M1, like 12 hours of battery life. That's amazing. They're lighter. They're, you know, they have that wow factor to them. And you can't discount those features. If you're looking at it from a pure IT performance perspective, the L15s is great. I've used Lenovo's myself, and I love them. Like, I used the ThinkPad X1 Nano, and that one was an amazing laptop.
Well, but, here's the other thing. If you're looking at a Mac as a potential thing you can buy, you're probably in that ecosystem and want that Mac, regardless of if a PC is even better or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're stuck with whatever Apple wants to give you in that Mac. That's just kind of how that ecosystem works. You just get what they give you because it's Mac.
Yeah, for sure. And like the folks working in tech love it, you know? Like the engineers who want a portable laptop on the go love the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro.
Personally, I hate the things.
It's fine.
I hate the iOS. I hate the Apple ecosystem. I hate OS X. I feel backwards in it, honestly. Like, I don't know what I'm doing with anything.
I feel encumbered in the interface and such, but partly that's because of getting used to how Windows operates versus Mac. There's a lot of things that are really nice, such as uninstalling applications or installing applications. Just drag the app as a container and you're done. I mean, it's really nice and sleek, and it's great for people who don't want to have to learn the OS and how it works.
There's actually a Linux UI extension. I don't remember what it was called. There's this Chinese team working on it, right? It's basically the user experience of iOS on Android. Yeah. Was it Android or Linux? I don't remember its name exactly, but
I'm not sure if I'd want the iOS experience on an Android phone. That's just losing too much.
I think some people would like it. I'm not sure if our audience would, but it was interesting, you know.
I've considered buying iPhones because of sometimes the hardware in them or the fact that there were like sales on them or whatever, but I can't use an iOS device because I just know how to use Android. I just know where everything is and I don't want to learn how to use this device. That's kind of where I'm at with the OS X stuff. It's just different. And I'm giving up too much and I'm paying too much out of pocket for this thing that looks nice.
Exactly. But keep in mind that iOS and macOS users have some of the highest user satisfaction rates in the industry.
It's because they know what they're using. And I mean, I don't know how much of that has to do with the actual user experience and how much people who say that stuff.
Here's the other thing. NVIDIA also has a high satisfaction rate.
They do.
Yeah.
But that's because of the following. The people that are willing to report that they're having great success with it.
There are a lot of Intel fanboys who would say things that made absolutely no sense about how, well, you can't buy an AMD CPU because that changes the kind of drivers you use. And it's like, what are you talking about?
So there was an interesting comment was that, but they will still need ARM technology. So interesting fact that Apple doesn't use traditional ARM cores, right? They're kind of doing their own thing
right now.
They're custom cores. Like they used ARM cores initially. They're part of that alliance to use ARM cores.
So that they can have the licensing. They've been doing their own thing for a while. Yeah, it's the technology licensing.
But they're way ahead of the competition. DX Helio says engineers love Macs. What are you talking about? It's crap, unimaginable. Go to Silicon Valley. Most engineers have a Mac. Tell me otherwise, I'll believe you.
Well, I'm also gonna make a point here. There is a difference between software people and hardware people. The kind of people who code do not need anything that works particularly well, and it could be that they just like certain things about it. Again, just because someone is, you know, has a really well-paying job and is really good at one thing doesn't mean he knows anything about the other side.
Sure, but I'm not saying that these guys are better than the hardware guys. I'm saying
this is what they want.
This is a market, and this is what people want. Not everyone wants Windows, you know. For people who want Linux, that's fine. At the end of the day, we're all going to coexist. You know, you're going to have the Mac guy with the Mac thing, Windows.
Well, that's the big thing about HTML5, and what's been great about that whole movement is everything has been moving to a web-based app. And I'm quite happy for it, because I've been in the industry having to deal with Java and Flash-based web backends for things like Brocade switches, Cisco switches, or Cisco's firewalls and that kind of stuff, where they have these old requirements that you have to have IE6 in some cases just to access their interfaces properly. Door hardware controllers that don't work on the newest browsers because of TLS and things like that. You just have to have this VM with Windows XP sitting around just so you can fire it up and access these pieces of hardware.
I swear by God as my witness, JavaScript and HTML have been a godsend for these technologies. Do you guys know what Electron is?
Yeah.
It's basically the JavaScript framework that every popular app on there is made on. Visual Studio Code, Discord.
I thought that was MooTools.
No.
So
there's a framework every week for JavaScript. They come and go.
That's true. But Electron has a very huge following. And I see the stuff where you can have a website or a web app that's everywhere. That's amazing. That's just crazy for me.
Yeah, Zoran's like, mechanical engineers use Windows 10 exclusively. And you want to know something? Like pump mechanic and things like that, people that work in industrial environments, they use Windows exclusively as well.
Yes.
Because their tools are only in Windows. They're older binaries in some cases that only work on a Windows 7 laptop. They don't. They're not compatible with Windows 10. And heck, I've had a XP laptop sitting around at work with some really old stuff in case if any of the older stuff needs to be accessed.
Yeah. But the kind of people I'm involved with include programmers, people in the audio space, people who use Pro Tools and stuff like that.
The audio space, Mac has had the hold on it for 20 years now. It's because of the latency in the OS. Like, there is a legitimate reason for audio engineers to love Mac OS because of the lack of latency. I mean, Windows latency has gotten better, and this is something that I originally
wanted, and
Windows latency was really bad in the XP and 7 days, but it's come a long way, but it's still not the same.
You know, so. I was a Windows user for a very long time, and then I used OS X Lion, I think. And it was a Core 2 Duo iMac, right? And I was surprised, how is this Core 2 Duo running so well? It was a software, and I kind of fell in love with it there. You know, the first laptop I bought after that was a MacBook Pro. Kind of had to because my program required it. But from there on, I was a Mac person for a very long time.
That's the thing is, when you're having to have a very generic platform and support everything that Windows has to end up supporting at the end of the day, you do not have the luxury of doing the super fine optimization for this one set of hardware that you bless and sanction to run on your OS. Maybe if you try running Windows inside of Boot Camp and see how that performs, I don't know. It probably won't perform any better than on a normal PC. Or is it Parallels?
Believe it or not, Parallels emulation is really good on the M1, surprisingly.
Yeah.
In the comments, X Ubuntu is really good for lower end hardware, though. I don't know. I can't comment on that, but if someone else can, please.
I mean, it always kind of has been. And I've used Hackintoshes before. I used to make Hackintoshes for people, believe it or not. And a lot of the really expensive high-end builds that I would do were Hackintoshes for people that were, you know, audio engineers in like Brooklyn and people like that. So, I mean, that side, I totally understand why that side is there, but I don't really see the future being a bunch of people running M1 MacBook Airs.
And, Donnie threw us a little bit of a bone here. Audio latency in Windows is atrocious, better than before, but not even close to macOS.
Yeah. There's certain
audio
reasons.
Engineers swear by the Mac. That's how good they have it is
to
for them.
Yeah.
Because they have to.
I mean,
like,
even
have you ever
tried to do audio work with you know, like, I forget what they're called, but like VST plugins, things that you actually play, or like inputs
they
from
crash.
I would have enough of a delay that I could not play it. I just could not do it.
Yep. So I went to the School of Audio Engineering, SA Institute. That's what it's called now. And I worked with a lot of audio engineers in my university.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I'm more in the creative spaces. And,
well, those guys are going to love those things. And again, you don't need a 64-core monster to do audio work. You really don't.
Exactly. You need QuickSync. Intel Technologies are really good for that. But at the same time, you know, people are still running older Macs to this day, which is surprising.
For what, your workload hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The workload just hasn't changed.
I think it just circles back to use case. You know, you have a particular use case and you use what works best for it. And
so,
when it comes to certain workloads, like the marketing people or accountants and things like that, they really have no need to be tied to a particular OS or hardware type.
Exactly.
Zurin had a comment saying that a simple sound card fixes those audio issues. Believe me, I tried that. It improves it. It just does not remove the issue of near zero audio latency.
It's like saying you have a broken bone and you're putting a Band-Aid on it.
It's just the way that the Windows audio engine works. It's just not as efficient. But again, there's support for a wide variety of devices where Apple supports, you know, a handful. I've tried USB devices. Again, it's not ideal. If you are a professional audio person, it's really hard to do it. And some people can get used to it. Like, there's some DJs and guys who just use Windows stuff and they still do. But it's hard.
Yeah. For example, the entry price to enter the Mac platform is $699. It's higher than PC, but to kids getting in, this is going to be their thing for the next 15 to 20 years, you know? Schools are getting on it. Parents want something affordable that doesn't look like garbage. And that plays a factor as well. So people's perception of Apple. Apple is known to be virus-free.
Well, the perception
is
not
virus-free.
This isn't the same. To be fair, though, the perception is not the same as it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because 10 years ago, it was a lot worse on the Windows stuff. There's been a lot of really nice, sleek designs.
Yeah, that gap's been made smaller, but... You know, there's just going to be those people who just want one. Like, the other day, I was speaking to a friend of mine, and he goes like, yeah, I've used Windows all my life, but we were just sitting and talking, and he goes like, I really want to get this Mac Mini. And I was like, why? He's just like, it's amazing. He just didn't have an explanation. He was just like, it's amazing. And I was like, right, that's the effect it has, that the product has on people, you know?
Well, and if your workload or your set of applications is so readily able to just drop out of the PC space and pick up a Mac and be 100% functional again, then, yeah, you can easily jump back and forth. It's that use case thing.
Yep. And someone
Disney uses proprietary software on their standard PC, software can catch up. Sure, the software can catch up, but the software that we're talking about here is for smaller studios and for people who are, personal creators. Those people don't have a software team that they can give millions of dollars in order to do R&D to fix these problems in Windows or to use special specific proprietary devices. Disney is a different animal. You can't really compare Disney to, like I said, a guy living in a loft in Brooklyn who does audio work for, a bunch of places on contracts.
Exactly, and there are way more of them out there than you think, surprisingly. Like, I was like, oh yeah, audio engineers, maybe there are like 15, 20 of them out there. No, there are hundreds in the Middle East, and Middle East is a very small part of the world. You know, the American market, the African market, the Asian market, they're huge. And someone mentioned that, yeah, there is an issue with their SSD because of the way their memory works. Yeah, I mean, it's Gen 1 stuff. I mean, x86 had its issues initially with performance, you know, but over time it got there, right? And I don't know if you've heard of this company called Jamf. They make enterprise software for the Apple ecosystem, and they're making bang money off selling $1 a Mac fee, you know? The fees are very low, and if they're making bang money, imagine how many Macs are out there.
So what are they doing?
They just make management software for enterprise, you know? Like if a guy like the IT guy wants to manage a lot of devices, he can just do it from Jamf. He can update
I
custom
mean, I
softwares
su so I suppose you could do Linux, and there probably are Linux distros that have really good audio latency.
and there are.
But the problem is the kinds of people who, not to offend anybody here, the kinds of people who tend to work in these industries are not the kinds of people who want to work in Linux, because it's not really friendly, user friendly for
Exactly.
normal people.
I'm platform agnostic. I will use anything that I feel like using or that I need to use, right?
So you're talking about a different thing here. If it's just idling, why would it page hard? I think the problem is surfacing under heavy use. I have honestly no idea.
Right. Just for context, Alex, the Mac has, so the M1 Macs have this issue where a lot of users are seeing a lot of data written on their SSDs. That's because of how the memory works, is that after the 8 gig limit is used, it's going to use your storage as memory, basically, as RAM. And even though the SSD is really quick, it works. There's a lot of data being written
And it's
and
strained on the
rewritten, and it's straining the SSD. Now, there could be an OS fix for this or whatever. So, Denver1G1 says, just check my Mac Mini uptime of 3.5 days. Idle the entire time. This is my first time logging it. It has written 110 gigabytes.
Yeah, you're gonna have issues where the drives fail with this kind of writing.
Yeah,
Maybe
but keep
there's
in
something
mind.
they could fix in the firmware or something. Maybe they
Yeah.
can have an update or something. But that's if
Gen
you
1
know
issue.
what the lifespan on SSDs are, well, then you'd be cutting into the performance. How much performance would you be cutting in if you don't page to this memory? Like, I don't
Exactly.
even know if this is necessarily like a mistake, where it's just like the thing's behaving out of order. This might just be a just download more RAM.
Just
This
yeah.
might just be a trade-off with the way that this performs. I mean,
Exactly. Plus, SSDs are getting better every year. So
well,
they're getting
I
better,
had this
but
they're getting
not with
faster. They're
writes.
not getting better with their total life.
Performance,
Performance is getting better,
endurance.
but their endurance is going down every generation as they go to the different cell memories.
Yeah, which is
If
why
this was an
Optane was such
SLC,
a big thing.
yeah. If this was an SLC, if you were using SLC SSDs, the old ones that are really expensive to manufacture, the ones where they only use like SLC caches now, this wouldn't be an issue because, you'd have tons and tons of terabytes to write to. No, not
Also,
much.
I'd like to point.
This could
Yeah,
be
go ahead.
Micron. No, that's a fair point, actually. It could be using the Micron 3DX point that could have closer to RAM endurance. I would hope so. I would hope that they would think of that. I mean, you could just use more expensive and specific SSDs that are built to handle this for this.
Yeah. So I was actually having this conversation with some of my friends with the Apple fan club. So I'm part of the Apple fan club. I mean,
there you go.
I have to be, right?
There you go.
So the conversation we basically had was, listen, the SSDs have endurance, and beyond that, their reliability goes down. So at 100% reliability, you're looking at maybe 200,000 terabytes or whatever, you know, whatever the amount is. But after that, your ability to reliably use it goes down. It doesn't just stop working one day, you know? So you might get 3 years, you might get 10 years. It depends.
It actually does stop working one day.
it does.
From my experience in our enterprise environment, we have desktops that have SSDs, laptops. They just stop working one day. That's their most common form of failure that I have seen.
And you can still get MLC, but MLC only, how do I put this? Its endurance rates are not spectacular compared to TLC. They're better.
Yeah. Also, speaking of memory, Samsung actually released the 980 Pros, which is DRAM-less SSDs.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you guys have a look at those?
Yeah, I've seen them. They're actually performing really well.
DRAM-less is not as big of an issue as people make it, depending on how the drive is done and the kinds of workloads you throw at it. There are very specific workloads where DRAM-less looks really bad, where when you look at reviews, it's like, oh my God, this is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But in real use case scenarios, I mean, most people aren't really taxing their SSDs.
They're not.
So the example that you made of, you know, most people don't need X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. It's even more of a edge case for people who really tax the SSD.
Thanks for correcting me, Steam Rick. The new DRAM-less 980 is not Pro, so it's just the standard one.
Yeah, the Pros are the ones that they tend to do the extra features like DRAM.
Yep. Also, I use the P1s from Crucial. Those are nice. They're very good budget SSDs. They're not amazing, but they're affordable, and they give you capacity. And
well, they're affordable. That's the thing. They're affordable.
You could get the P2s, which are a lot faster and better. Or if you want top of the line, that's Samsung right now, right?
So I think we're kind of getting over time, but I wanted to answer this question from AMGV Media. Do you think AMD storage tests with an SSD and an HDD would help solve endurance issues and have a decent enough performance? No, because of the way that it works. So what is happening, what causes the drives to have endurance issues and for the cells to eventually be unwritable is that you are writing to them, and then you are then deleting it and then writing again. And it can only have so many writes, not reads. Now, what happens when you use these is that you are using the SSD as a cache, and you are whenever you change what is in the cache, you are then writing to it, which might happen a lot unless you have a very specific use case where you only have these certain things in cache, like, say, you only play one game a lot,
mm-hmm.
Or you only play X amount of file. You only use certain amounts of files so much. But every time you change what's in the cache due to your different use case scenarios, then you would be writing to it. So it might help in some situations, but generally not.
So it's kind of like Intel's, what was it called? What was the technology called?
I could actually see a lot of the creative users and the sort of normie users with these M1 laptops, having an issue because they don't back up their data, because normal people don't back up their data. Data loss, and they'll be very, very angry when their drive just suddenly fails one day.
You know what's funny? You could get like iCloud for like $1 a month.
They don't, though.
No,
I've worked with those people. I've worked with them. They don't do that.
Hey, man, maybe we could spread a little bit of awareness there.
Yeah. They don't listen to us. They don't watch us.
get cloud and back up your data.
Well, listen, we are preaching to the choir when we're talking to people listening to this show right now.
I would love to see an end user with their 5 megabit upload on some cheap internet connection. Welcome to the US, guys. Try to upload their 1 terabyte of data from their computer because they just checked the C drive instead of picking their individual things when they did the smart backup of whatever backup service they're using. It's like when you're being recommended to use the cloud to store your pictures on your phone because 16 or 32 gig of phone storage is enough. Speaking of a certain fruit company. And you blow through your 1 gig of mobile data in the first 5 minutes of taking pictures at some new location that you went to visit because it starts uploading. Or you don't check the box of auto upload to the cloud and then your stuff never gets backed up anyway. And then you drop your phone in a toilet.
So we're talking about hard drive failures. I still have a SATA 1 Seagate Barracuda drive, 80 gig, that still works. It's loud and it's very painful to use and very slow, but it still works.
And speaking of backups, okay. I have something similar to that I went and took a lot of my pictures and stuff, put them on it, and then put it in a little static bag and threw it in a drawer. If I ever need backups and I have no other backups to access, I can go and try that thing and see if it works. It'll still be more reliable than tape backup.
Honestly, just get a 1 terabyte hard drive and just back up to that. How much are you going to end up using?
I mean, I have a 4 terabyte drive that I use to back up a lot of my old data, and it just sits in there.
Yep.
I know people like to have cold backups and have all these other things. I just have this one backup, and it runs. I mean, if I have a hardware failure, then I guess I have a hardware failure.
Just wait till you have a power supply die that fries your hard drives.
Oh, I guess that'll happen.
There's a reason why cold backups exist.
Kirk, the stuff that I have really isn't that important. I'm going to be honest with you.
The only drives that failed on me were Seagate HDDs. I'm glad no one brought up shingle drives yet.
Oh, God.
I almost wrote article about shingle drives back when... Go ahead.
I was going to say, when it comes to power supplies, I only use the XFX XTR 1050 watt. Okay?
Stop shilling.
Gold rated power supplies, which I was sent like 4 years ago. I don't use anywhere near 1,000 watts.
I have a comment on your XFX plug. XFX, you make good cards, but you guys need to sponsor us more often, man.
I've worked with them a lot for other places and before working for Adored. I don't know if they've sampled us yet here at Adored, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, maybe if Team Red wants them to, or maybe if they want some content out there, we'd be happy to.
Whoa, facilitate. Grumpy. We don't talk about that on the stream. Let's just.
Yeah, Grumpy. I know you don't like having your stash outed. I know. So in the backdrop if you look behind me,
the only thing that
I
have like that.
Yeah, here.
The only thing like that I have is 500 gigabytes of cute anime girls that viewers have sent me. So.
You keep it in your nice little love folder. But as far as backups are concerned, if you guys want to have some kind of reliable backup for home computers, for the kids and your spouse, that kind of stuff, the box that I built in the article, you can see right here, is a pretty good template that you can use for any size of application, guys. You can do 3 drives in a RAID Z1, so it's a RAID 5 essentially, of 3 terabyte drives is really inexpensive. You can have it on and running all the time. If you run Unraid or FreeNAS, it's pretty easy to set up an SMB share. And you can just mount that and just have it as a network drive that you just dump stuff onto. And you can set up snapshots that will keep that data alive if somebody accidentally deletes it, like the kids. Just saying.
Yep. I mean, that's a good area to stop stream for the day. I mean,
well, I think we get it.
Storage advice. Yeah.
One other person. RAID is not backup.
And no.
I'm assuming he's talking that in relation to somebody else. I'm saying that this RAID is something you would save data to that's already on your computers. And so it would be a second copy or a backup of your PC. Obviously, if you want to really back up this NAS, then you could take that and put it on an external drive, something like that, to then have a backup of that. But RAID is not a backup. RAID can fail. Even if it's highly resilient, you can still lose all your data if there's a bug or some more catastrophic issue. So no, RAID is not a backup.
Last thing is, Kirk, they mentioned magnetic tape, and they said that some people still use them. I just wanted you to...
We still use magnetic tape, and I do not like it. I actually consulted or recommended against using the tapes, but there is one thing that tape is still very useful for, and that is super cheap media for the terabytes. And we can get a 12, 20 terabyte tape drive, disk, whatever, for significantly cheaper than a 12 or 20 terabyte hard drive. And if you're cycling through it just the same, your tape will be a little less reliable for recovering from. As long as it's treated properly, it won't be that bad. But the thing I've always seen as a problem is actually backing up to those tapes. I'd say almost 60% of our tape write backups fail for just a mere 20 or 30 terabytes of data. So you have this low likelihood of actually having a successful backup that you can then offsite. So yeah, hard drives are more expensive, but what are you really paying for? Reliable data recovery, and that is the more important cost.
Yeah, I mean, to some, those pictures of your children could be worth a lot, you know?
Well, I mean, people wouldn't be using stuff like that for... that would be more in like a...
enterprise.
More on the business side. Yeah, on the enterprise level.
Yeah, but... You know, I think the advice of the day is... make storage good.
Big storage, even better.
Big storage, yes.
You gotta think. Well, a lot of people have digital copies of their photos rather than an album in a drawer somewhere. If you lose your computer, you lose all of those photos except for what you managed to post to the cloud because of Facebook, right? So,
yep.
There are ways of having your pictures backed up, even if you're saving it to a little external hard drive. That $50 for a little 2 terabyte, 2.5-inch portable drive is extremely worth it, guys. Even 2, 3, 4 copies of your pictures, depending on how frequently you get around to updating them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we gotta wrap it.
I think we covered everything that we wanted to today.
And guys, don't forget to like this video, subscribe to our channel, hit up Discord. Did we have any questions from Discord, by the way?
I looked, and we probably didn't see any now, but when I looked, we didn't have any that we didn't answer last weekend. So definitely want to encourage you guys to ask questions either in this video comments on the Discord. You have to be a patron to make comments in the questions channel on the Discord, so keep that in mind. So just use the YouTube video comments to ask your questions, and of course join the live streams. We're trying to do them every Saturday, hopefully around the same time. We were a little delayed today due to some technical issues. We almost had one of our other writers on with us today, but he was unable to today, so unfortunately.
I would like to suggest a ban hammer on this tech potato guy.
Not enough talk about a certain article.
Fair enough.
I strongly encourage you to go and read that article on Anantech. Ian did an awesome job on it.
Yeah. I would definitely like to have him on next week. And I'll try to get him on next week.
Yeah, give him advance notice.
Yep. And yes, we can actually discuss this more in detail. This would be actually a lot of fun to really get into. It'd be really
also one precondition for coming on here is that you have to smile awkwardly.
I mean, have you seen his YouTube videos?
Exactly. That's why I'm saying it.
All right.
And that'll be like our thing.
All right. Well, have a good one, everybody. And we'll see you guys next week.
Yep.
We'll see you in the next one.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you later.